My name is Marcin Stepan. I'm the Programs Manager at ONFIF, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Volker Wieland, the Managing Director in the Institute for Monetary and Financial Stability at Goethe University. He's also the member of the German Council on Economic Experts and a member of the Scientific Advisory Council for the German Ministry of Finance. Today we're looking at the future of Europe and post-German elections. Professor Wieland, thank you very much for joining us today. If we take a look at these elections happening on Sunday, the 24th, Angela Merkel is vying for a fourth term as chancellor. It seems that Merkel is certainly leading by wide margin. According to recent polls, she's ahead with 37% compared to 22% to Mr. Schulz, closest competitor on that front. To what extent is Merkel's mandate almost a foregone conclusion? And to what extent can we say that these elections are actually quite boring?
Well, I don't think they're boring. I think it's pretty clear that she will head the largest party and nobody can form a coalition without her. So she's very likely to be the next chancellor. However, she's going to face a difficult job to form a coalition. I mean, they could try again with the Social Democrats, but I think the relationship isn't that great anymore. And not many people seem to really want continuation of this coalition with under Merkel's leadership. She doesn't have many other options. Her potential partner are the Free Democrats, but they probably won't have enough seats together. So there's a lot of talk recently about a coalition between the Christian Democrats, the Free Democrats, and the Greens. But they really cover a wide range of positions, and it's hard to see how they're going to get together. So this is not going to be easy to form a government.
When we look at the issues at stake, what are some of the concerns for the electorate? To what extent are these issues, let's say, looking at the economic concerns, or perhaps would you say there's more concern about the social aspects?
So if you think about the electorate, it's hard to say. I think there is a sense of complacency. You know, Germany is doing well economically. We have high employment. And generally people, you know, if you ask them directly in surveys, they're very happy with their situation. The debate pre-election was covering a range of topics, you know, pension system, taxation, Europe, migration. Migration, I think, is a concern. But what's missing is really a discussion about how the German economy can remain viable for the future. So I think there's too much of a sense of complacency. Some of the debates, you know, I don't know whether they reflect the vision of the electorate. There's certainly the debates in the media. They focus on redistribution, on making the pension system more generous. That's not really helping make the German economy viable for the future.
If we look at perhaps some of the political parties that you mentioned, so you said with regards to SDP that it's going to be quite difficult and certainly perhaps another grand coalition may not be wanted. But then you also mentioned sort of looking at the FDP and the so-called, in terms of colours, people look at the potential Jamaica coalition aspect. You said that there's not much options sort of cooperation there. Is that because there's so much divergence between political party stance here, or are there other tensions at play?
Let me structure that in two segments. One is the question of a continuation of the grand coalition between CDU, CSU, right, the Christian Democrats, and the Social Democrats, SPD. To me, it seems this coalition has run its course. And if you look at the record, I mean, what they've done, the Social Democrats have actually been very successful in putting through their agenda, but it's not really helping them very much in the election. And now the rhetoric, at least, is quite aggressive from the challenger, from Mr. Schulz. And I think it's a possibility. But it's not going to be easy because, again, the Social Democrats will have to try and show, hey, we're going to get something out of forming that coalition, and they're not going to get the chancellorship if they don't have the largest share of the votes among the two parties, and they won't have that. So it's going to be difficult to form a coalition there. And as I said, the other option with the Free Democrats, that's probably not going to work because they're not going to have enough votes. I mean, who knows? I mean, there are a lot of uncertainties here. If the Christian Democrats and the Free Democrats just have enough seats to govern, they probably would. And this would be a combination of middle of the road policies plus more economically liberal policies, free market oriented policies, and also some generally liberal social policy. But I think that will have implications for Europe. But given that they probably won't have enough seats, the other coalition talked about is Jamaica, right? It's a combination of colors which make up the Jamaican flag, and the Christian Democrats are usually associated with black Catholic color. The greens, with green, as the name says, appealing to the environment they want to save. And the Free Democrats have chosen yellow. I don't know exactly why, but anyway, that's the combination of colors. And, you know, the Greens have actually fought quite aggressively in this campaign against the Free Democrat Party, because, you know, all the smaller parties, there's also the more populist party, the AfD, on the right wing, and then the former Communist Party, the left, on the left wing. They're all vying for third place. And particularly Greens have been quite aggressive. I mean, it goes both ways, Free Democrats and Greens. So it's hard to see how they can find a common ground. Maybe they will in the end. It's all about actually getting into government, but it'll be hard. For example, on Europe, they have very different positions. I mean, the Greens typically take a position that is very positive towards greater redistribution transfers, a union, which might even include Eurobonds at some point, while the Free Democrats are just in the opposite direction in that area.
But at the same time, there is a Jamaica coalition that's been formed in Schleswig-Holstein, not on the federal level. Obviously, this is clearly a novelty here. What's the sort of perhaps divergence between what happens at a state level and what can happen on a federal level in terms of coalition?
Yeah, we have actually, you know, on the state level, all kinds of coalitions. It's a bit of a trial ground. In Hessen, where we are here in Frankfurt, we actually have CDU and Greens. That's another possibility, just like with the CDU-FDP, though CDU and Greens on the federal level probably won't have enough votes. In Schleswig-Holstein, as you mentioned, that we have this Jamaica coalition. In East Germany, we have a coalition of Social Democrats, the ex-communist left, and the Greens. So that has been done too. And remember, this term, we had the possibility, or the Social Democrats had the possibility, to form a coalition with the left and the Greens, right? There would have been room for a government completely oriented towards the left side. They didn't choose to do that. They went with the CDU as junior partner. So in a sense, I think these tryouts on the state level are of limited importance for the federal level. You know, on the state level, the range of policies for which the state governments are responsible is fairly limited. And then, you know, in different states, you have different groups dominating the parties. If you look at the Greens, they really have two wings, a more realist wing, they call it. They're more moderate. And then you have the fundamentalist wing, the more oriented towards socialism, but also more committed towards environmental policies. And I think in Schleswig-Holstein, it seems the realist wing is strong. The same is, by the way, true for Hessen or Baden-Württemberg, which is a place where the Greens actually are putting up the prime minister and the CDU is a junior partner. But on the federal level, so far, the Green Party, to my impression, has been dominated somewhat more by the fundamentalist wing. So it's a little hard to see how this is going to work out. But, you know, they'll form some government.
If we take a look, perhaps at the most controversial party is the AfD, who's actually looks to win seats at the federal level for the first time. I understand at the moment they're present in most of the states in Germany. Although the AfD has been ripe with internal conflicts and it missed its 5% vote share in 2013, what can we say about the AfD and perhaps the implications if they do get into parliament on the federal level?
Well, that's one of the reasons why it is not at all a boring election. I mean, first of all, it's unclear how many votes they're going to get. As I said, the small parties are vying for third place. I mean, whoever is on third place, that's a strong signal. And there's a good chance that the AfD will get the third most votes from the electorate. I mean, it's possible, particularly if you look at the poll. It's often said that maybe people are more reluctant to reveal their preference for the AfD because it's also now associated with fairly right-wing policies, which in Germany is something, you know, not everyone wants to be associated with. So it may be that more people vote for them than the poll suggests. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see. So that will certainly be a big change. Also, the party, its name comes from something Angela Merkel said. You know, she said that was back when the restructure policies for the euro area were discussed and decided. She said there's no alternative to these policies. And so when they created this party, they wanted to say, here, there's an alternative to what Merkel says. So surely, as long as Merkel is leading the CDU, I can't see any getting together of those two parties, right, which would be more government-oriented towards center-right. But who knows, you know, if this party is in there for the long run, sometime down the road, there could be a center-right coalition, but certainly not this time. Also, initially, initially, when this party started out to become popular, there was a strong group of anti-euro people, including many economists. Remember, there was this party leader, Bernd Lucke. When he was elected to European Parliament, because last time they just missed the 5% limit, so they didn't make it in our federal parliament, but they got into the European Parliament, where we don't have 5% limit. And Bernd Lucke and his allies basically joined the British Conservatives as a, you know, the coalition together with the British Conservatives in the European Parliament, to my knowledge. So, you know, that's not exactly extremely right wing. However, you know, in subsequent infighting, as you mentioned, he actually left the party, his wing left the party largely. And the party shifted much more, I think, towards more populist, possibly more right wing stance, and particularly with the migration issue. That has really propelled them to the numbers they have now. And you can see clearly in this election, some of their leaders are making fairly extremist statements, which get them a lot of media attention and the conflict. But some people vote for that. They want to see someone challenging Angela Merkel. So it'll be interesting to watch how many votes they get, if they can make third place, and whether they can establish themselves for the long run. I think at the moment this is questionable, because refugee immigration has gone down, and maybe over time this question will move to the background, and then the question will be, what other issues does this party have?
It's interesting exactly what you mentioned. So in terms of the aspects of immigration, because obviously when Merkel's decision to open borders to refugees in 2005, it was seen as sort of the least popular decision of her chancellorship. But yeah, at the same time, at the moment, according to recent polls, he's got 63% of approval ratings. So to what extent is immigration really such a big issue, perhaps the way it has been clearly for the UK in terms of Brexit?
First of all, I think the decision was divisive. It was also popular among a large group. I mean, remember, we had people clapping in Munich at the train station welcoming refugees. So it's not like everyone thought it was a bad decision. You have to see it also, you know, in front of the background of German history. I think being open to refugees is something we have emphasized for a long time, having fairly liberal political asylum laws. So in a sense, you know, Angela Merkel, with her decision, went also against European partners. Right, because not all European partners were happy with the large influx, which mostly came to Germany. And in the end, the plans which were made on the European level to redistribute refugees across Europe, right, didn't really come to fruition. And as you mentioned, apparently this also was an important issue in the Brexit referendum, even though refugees didn't come in great numbers to the UK. I mean, UK has immigration for other reasons. So in Germany, I think it was a difficult decision. In the end, I think it led to this emergence of an opposition, and for the first time we have a party which seems to be able to establish itself on the right of the Christian Democrats. And for a long time, since World War II, it was thought that that's not going to be possible, because being associated, say, with, if someone calls you, oh, you speak like a Nazi, right, that's a pretty damaging comment in Germany, but it's longer in the past, so things change.
Yeah. If you take a look, perhaps, at some of the economic challenges facing Germany at the moment, it's interesting, perhaps, to see it's not that much, perhaps, difference in terms of programs between some of the offers of CDU and SPD. I understand with CDU sort of focusing much more on the economy, looking at promise of spending on infrastructure. How do you see some of the challenges facing the German economy?
Yeah, I think this is really worrisome. The discussion is way too complacent. Things are going well, and somehow the presumption is they will just always continue to go well. The economy will grow, will generate this full employment, and all we have to do is to distribute more of these gains to a wider group of people, more transfers, etc., higher taxes for the rich. So the big topic for many is inequality. If you look at the facts, so for example, in our German Council of Economic Experts, we write an annual report for the government. And one of the things we have to look at is always income inequality, for example. And what we find is there was an increase in income inequality up to 2004, 2005. But since then, it has been flat. So it has not increased further. If you look at the redistribution in Germany, we actually are among the countries with record redistribution via the tax system and the transfer system. So there is really not a need to do more on inequality. It's a very different situation, for example, from the US, right, where this may be the question of losers and winners from globalization, influence in election. This may also have been an issue with the Brexit referendum. In Germany, we have not had, since 2005, any significant increase in income inequality after taxes and transfers, importantly. right? Before taxes and transfers, of course, there's an increase, but not after taxes and transfers. So if you look at the facts, this shouldn't be an issue. Another issue, which I think it's really worrisome, in the debate between Martin Schulz and Angela Merkel, both promised that with them, it wouldn't be possible. They wouldn't agree to raising the retirement age. But we're an aging society, and to keep the pension system sustainable, we have to do something. And the most sensible and easiest thing to do is to link the retirement age to life expectancy. So the longer we live and live healthily, the longer we can work. If we don't work, then someone else has to pay for our pension. So, you know, basically putting that off the table is a problem. And I could enumerate other fields. So I think an important area is digitalization. I think this is a huge challenge for the economy. You know, our big companies may not be successful in the future if they don't adjust, right? Just think of cars, right? Electric cars. Look at the recent scandal with diesel engines and all that. It's not clear we're well prepared in terms of digitalization. We don't have large internet companies such as Apple, Google, Facebook. All we have is SAP. That's the only company in that range. So I think that's a problem. We have to adjust to digitalization. And if you think of what this coalition has done so far, most of it is about how can we better protect citizens from digitalization, maybe in terms of information. So, you know, some product, if you think of things such as Street View, they're not really available to a large extent in Germany because of all kinds of restrictions on data usage and information usage. So I think we have to really shift to a view, you know, how can we take advantage of the new technology rather than making the protection of the citizens in terms of, you know, who does knows what about your data the top priority. You know, in that regard, in fact, if you let people choose, they often give away a lot of information.
That's very interesting what you say. Exactly, sort of reading recent reports, apparently Germany ranks 25th in the world in terms of average speech downloads. So clearly there is certainly a big need for greater infrastructure spending there.
No. Let me intervene there. This is not an issue of investment. I think there is a totally misguided discussion going on that somehow Germany is lacking investment. The problem is not investment and infrastructure. We actually have a problem with the take-up of the infrastructure. So the problem is much more regulation than lacking investment.
I see. So slightly different aspects there. But then if you were to look at sort of the public investment aspects, to what extent do you think there might be greater appetite for the new coalition to start using some of its current account surplus?
I think it's a myth which is popular with the FT and some other media in Europe that somehow Germany has a huge investment problem or public investment problem. I don't think there's any convincing evidence if you look at it seriously. So this is something we've done every time, every year in our annual report. We have an English version, so I urge take to make that available. Basically, if you look at public investment, this is on a small scale. Anyway, what the potential lack is, and it's not so much limited because of money. I mean, we have tremendous tax income. It's rising rapidly. That's why also the debt is coming down, right? Because we can afford to pay down the debt. This is because we have full employment. We also, you know, benefit from the very low interest rates, extremely low interest rates of the ECB, right? The asset purchases, which have really put the German government's rates for short-term, medium-term debt in negative territory. So government finances are looking very good. It's not a lack of money. If, for example, you know, there's always discussions of some bridges not being fixed or some highways not being fixed. Typically, if you look closely, the limitation are things such as environmental regulation, other regulations, which make it difficult to actually move forward quickly with fixing those roads or bridges. But overall, the infrastructure is in very good shape. So that's a minor issue. And the government actually has responded and has increased investment. Nevertheless, you know, it's not hard to find states or cities or village leaders or city leaders to come out and complain and say, oh, we need so much more investment, public infrastructure. But you have to take into account that what's going on is we have a shrinking population in large areas in the countryside, in eastern states. Population is massively shrinking. So you have a competition between different smaller cities, communes for citizens. And so they think, oh, if they, you know, get more infrastructure, a new public swimming pool or other public services, they can keep their citizens. So there is a tendency to exaggerate the need for public investment.
Thank you very much for sort of clarifying that. To take a quick look at some of the challenges perhaps on the wider European level, how would you see some of the German response to some of France's ideas and Macron's ideas for greater EU integration, to some of the ideas of looking at EU finance ministry and aspects of Eurobond debt mutualization? How do you think that's going to play out in terms of sort of looking at the wider integration aspects of Europe?
Well, Europe, of course, is a big issue for Germany. I mean, I think we want Europe to succeed. Germany is in the middle of Europe. We've had two world wars. You know, Germany is doing well when it has peace with its neighbors. So any German chancellor, any German leader has always understood that for Germany, it's absolutely in its self-interest to have Europe functioning. So there is a saying that whenever France and Germany agreed on something, moved forward, Europe not meant as a geographical label, but with referring to the European Union. I think also from a German perspective, it's a huge loss that Great Britain decided to exit or wants to exit the European Union. I think this is really a huge loss. I think this was a big achievement to have all the parties who fought against each other in Second World War and the First World War together in the European Union. And so that's a pretty sad moment, at least from my perspective. So one concern certainly for Germany will be to make at least the best of what's happening and come to a conclusion with the UK, which works for both sides. But of course, it's difficult. You know, Germany cannot make decisions for other countries in the Union, and you will always find someone who may want to oppose something the UK wants in those negotiations. I hope for the best. It's certainly also in our interest. I think it's also in the UK's interest for that matter. Now, of course, if you look at Jean-Claude Juncker, for example, his recent speech, there's also the view, oh, now that the UK is moving out, finally, let's move forward with the more Franco-German view of what Europe should be, what the European Union should be, Jean-Claude Juncker's view or whatever. I think the problem with that is, and you hinted that, is that the Franco-German view is not a cemented view. Actually, for Germany, it was very good to have the UK a big player in this because we're just as close on many issues, especially economic issues, to the UK than to France. And so this is going to make this difficult. Now, Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron both have a strong incentive to make this a success, to make the European Union a success. And to do that, they have to deliver some success stories. And we'll see what they can come up with. I think you have the euro, right? They want to make the euro a success. You have other areas, you know, borders, migration. So that needs to be resolved in a way where citizens can see, okay, things are working well, sensibly. We don't want thousands of refugees dying in the Mediterranean, obviously. We also, or at least many people, don't seem to want thousands of refugees staying permanently in their local neighborhood, settling there. There's a fear of having too many people from a different background, right? You can see that happening in some regions, and that happens in all countries. So the topic of migration and borders, I think that's something where they could make a success of by coming together. And another area could be climate, energy policy. We have very different energy policies. And if you look at France vis-a-vis Germany, but actually, if you take the middle of that, you know, not rely as much on nuclear power as France does and not be as interventionist. And in Germany, we have an energy law which very much subsidizes wind power and especially solar power, which is not very efficient in Germany. So if we get a mix, I think that will be good for the climate and not bad, because what works for the climate policies is really the trading of allowing among the energy producers and having that fairly widely. So I think that's where there is success. I think for the euro, or where they can come up with success stories. For the euro, it's difficult. We have different proposals. I think euro bonds is not going to fly, not because if you have Martin Schulz as a chancellor, he would say, yes, we need euro bonds. Maybe even Macron would say that. But I think that's not a stable system. Basic view, establish euro bonds. Countries can do their fiscal policies according to their desires. Governments can basically run their fiscal policies as they desire. The responsibility for financing them and for funding them and keeping market access will not be with them anymore. They will be able to offload the responsibility for keeping finances sustainable, and that will be a sustainable system that will break up. Governments will not really do the sensible, sustainable policies if they don't have a clear incentive to do so. And that incentive has to come from markets. You know, basically, if a government mismanages its finances, it has to get a signal from markets that it's going to lose market access. And that's a disciplining mechanism. There are some areas, you know, they're calling for a European finance minister. They have different views on what that should be. Should it be more a position which runs ASM programs, which enforces sensible fiscal and structural reform policies? Or should it be a mechanism for redistribution? That seems like French view is closer to the redistribution establishing transfers. It is often said that those transfers are only in bad times and it would then be the reverse in good times when one country has good times and the other is in bad times. But of course, it creates the incentive to have permanent transfers in one direction or to decide on national policies that favor that. Just think of, for example, labor markets. Of course, you know, how large the share of unemployed is depends on what labor laws you have. And if you don't have to pay for the unemployed, you may be more willing to establish a system nationally, which results in more people unemployed. So as you see, I think there are different views between the Christian Democrats and the Free Democrats in Germany, for example, and on the other side, what Emmanuel Macron seems to be pushing for.
Thank you. That was very, very, very comprehensive. I would take perhaps the final question. I think looking at Angela Merkel and your relations with the US, relations with the world, she's been called the new leader of the free world by Timothy Garton-Ash, with the expectation at the moment, sort of looking at polls, obviously with her win. Can we expect any substantial differences, any changes, or is this going to be more the same cautious approach as we have seen?
Well, I think if Angela Merkel becomes chancellor, she will continue the approach she has taken in the past. It's worked pretty well for her. She's been successful. She has a chance to become the chancellor longest in office. I mean, so why would she change her approach?
And in that sense, in terms of setting up the government and when the elections come through, the results, depending on sort of the various wages and the specific numbers involved, how long would you expect the duration of the talks perhaps to be settled?
I think this can take a while, but it depends very much who is talking to whom. But I think they won't go on for years. I mean, last time it took a while. I don't think it will take much longer than last time.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Professor Wieland. Join us again next week as we continue our analysis of some of the issues and challenges with regards to globalization, taking into account the future of free trade and protectionism. We'll be live on the ONFIF channel on Tuesday, so you can download it once it's been broadcast or subscribe to our channel. If you enjoyed the program, then please do leave us a review.